Thank you for tuning into Black and Well Voices, a space where we invite Black identities to share their thoughts, experiences, and endeavors that'll push the collective forward. Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning into Black and Well Voices. Today we are joined by the wonderful, the elegant, graceful, and spirited Dr. Mario Bouquet. And she is a Columbia University trained licensed psychologist, holistic mental health expert, sound bath meditation healer, and a generational trauma expert whose work predominantly focuses on helping individuals heal their whole selves and heal wounds of intergenerational trauma. And she does this through holistic mental wellness practices. So tune in as she joins our host, Olivia Grant, to discuss the deep-rooted history of trauma within the Black and Afro-Latino community and how we can all contribute towards shifting the narrative and collective healing. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Enjoy and be well.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Mario Bouquet. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How are you?
I am good. I am good. You're speaking to Olivia. I'm the host of Black and Well Voices. Yeah. And we are just so grateful that you've decided to grace us with your presence today. Excited that you're sharing your perspective and insight into the Black and Well community. Yes, how are you feeling about it all?
I'm excited to be in conversation with you. So I'm really thrilled that we get a chance to talk, and especially about Black wellness, for sure.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's get into it. So you are a holistic psychologist. What tell us, what does that entail, and what sparked your journey into this field?
Yeah, so being a holistic psychologist means that I embody a multidimensional way of orienting myself around the work around mental wellness. So it means that the work itself takes on this approach that really emphasizes the wellness within a person's mind, within a person's body, and within a person's spirit. And it's, you know, work that I like to call soul work, because we are really getting at the soul of the person, working through the mind, which is more of what traditional psychological methods really kind of
right
at. Yeah, so it's more of that comprehensive look into the whole person and treatment that really focuses on treating the whole human. So that's that piece. And then really how I got into it, I think I'm still kind of figuring that out. But
right.
Because it feels like every time I get this question, it offers me an opportunity for reflection.
Right.
And as a true psychologist would, I tend to go all the way back into the depths of my mind, and to how much I was led to be a person that is a healer in this form from probably the inception of my time on earth. Like I was,
right.
Yeah, I was definitely highly intuitive child, and, you know, very emotionally attuned to myself, to people around me. And I just remember specific moments and distinct markers of my life that were moments in which I saw a lot of pain, emotional pain, mostly reflected in my community. I grew up both in the, you know, Dominican Republic and then in Newark, New Jersey. In both settings, I saw an exacerbation of pain, just enormous amount of emotional pain in Black and Brown folks. And I just remember telling my mom that I wanted to do something about it, but I just never even knew that mental health was even a place for a career, like didn't even know it was a thing, right? You know, it was just a drive that I had as a kid to really see less of that suffering. But eventually, moments in which I had opportunities to dive into my own mental wellness practices, moments in which I had people to mentor me and tell me that that I was easy to talk to and someone that could thrive in this field and push me in that direction. Like all of those things kind of put together, I think we're all the driving force to getting me to where I am right now and helping my community to heal.
I think it's beautiful that, you know, you followed that, you know, even though you might not have known how you could make it into a career or anything like that. I think it's beautiful that you followed that because, you know, sometimes we are led to do certain things and we don't exactly know why. And, you know, the way society is set up, sometimes you kind of put those thoughts to the back burner and think, okay, well, this is not being done, so I'm going to just do something else. But I think it's beautiful that you followed that because it's obviously been so impactful. Your work has been so impactful. And you mentioned that, you know, growing up, you experienced seeing a lot of pain within your community. And so I want to ask, what do you think are some of the root causes of the pain and trauma that we experience within the Black community?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lens by which I operate is definitely one that is systemic, right? And so it includes the systemic inequities that are a large part of the what perpetuates unwellness within the Black community.
Right.
And so I, you know, I have to start from that lens, right? And from that perspective, I mean, oppression absolutely is a large proponent of emotional pain. And when I say emotional pain, a lot of the things that I am talking about do coincide with oppression, right? I grew up in pretty extreme poverty. And you know, poverty, I think the economics of this society are intertwined with race, right? I am from the camp that does believe in that the two are part of the same system. And so, you know, everybody that was in my community, I think literally like 100% of us were Black and brown growing up. And everything that I saw had to do with some sort of experience of deficit in resources into the community, right? People not having sufficient amount of resources for basic needs like food, right? There being food deserts and people as a result getting ill pretty soon in their lives. You know, like all of those things that then perpetuate further stress and create a system within a family, within a community of pain and suffering. A lot of it really can be tied back to the roots of oppression. And there's that, right? And then there is a lot of what I'm now learning that, you know, has a lot of generational kind of lineage type of connections, which is a lot of the ways in which we associate with one another within the Black community and as an extension of us, the larger community. You know, we pass on our pain in several ways generationally to one another because we haven't been offered opportunities for healing or resources or even the knowledge that we need to heal, right? So all of that has been a lot of what I've seen. And, you know, there is the span of all the things that happen as far as pain and trauma in globally in the world that also applies to us, right? We have experiences within our community of abuse. We have experiences within our community of experiences of failure or experiences of, you know, not being parented in a way that helps us to thrive, right? Like all of those things are definite narratives that are found within our community as well, right? But I think in the more like systemic lens, I definitely saw more of the generational trauma and pain and the systemic oppression based pain as well.
I think it's interesting how, you know, you mentioned that it's loaded, isn't it? it's intergenerational, and which means it's so deeply rooted. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting how you mentioned that sometimes we don't even realize that we need healing. And so I want to ask, how can we be more aware of when we are operating from a trauma response and aware when our wounds are coming up to the surface?
It's a great question. And it really, and the starting point is in growing our knowledge about emotional pain and growing in our emotional language too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We weren't really offered that opportunity kind of globally. That isn't much of what you hear within our communities. If someone was sat down and taught what emotions are, how they become expressed in the mind and the body and the spirit.
Right.
And if you don't have that, you know, it's really hard to then identify when it's happening, when emotions are happening within us. We're just kind of operating in a very autopilot kind of way and not taking a pause and a step back to actually reflect upon how we've been hurt and how we can be hurting upon other people in our communities.
Right, absolutely. And so once we have actually managed to identify how and where trauma plays a part in our lives, what are some of the advice you have or the steps that we can take to begin healing, particularly the intergenerational wounds?
Well, those ones in particular are definitely, because they are trauma-based wounds, they're best treated and referenced to in a space where there's a trained clinician, a therapist that can actually help a person orient themselves around the trauma itself, reconcile it, because trauma work does require, for someone that has been trained in being able to orient themselves around a person's trauma, you know, especially because I think it can be underestimated how much a person can engage in even greater suffering while they're doing the trauma work. I mean, we're talking about going into the most tender parts of who you are and opening up those wounds and excavating them and really getting into the depths of them. And to ask a person to do that is to ask them to go to a really tender place. And a person, a healer, a clinician has to be trained in how to help a person to then cap all of that off and then proceed on to the rest of their day and the rest of their lives, right? It's a very sensitive experience that requires, you know, for someone to know how to hold the person, because there's, you know, there's a heavy, heavy amount of experiences that we have within the Black community where there are very severe experiences of depression and anxiety as a result of trauma. And also some people, you know, may not even know how to get out of it and may, you know, go to desperate measures to try and get rid of the pain. So it's important to, you know, always have someone who can be helpful in that regard, understanding that there's limitations to therapy, right? The whole system is flawed. There are so many ways in which therapy has not been made accessible to Black individuals historically. And so I understand that that's not always a point of access for all of us, but it is really the best methodology for intergenerational trauma to be able to work with someone who is specialized in trauma and moreover in intergenerational trauma in some regard.
I think it's definitely interesting how, you know, you've mentioned that seeking professional help is so effective, because I feel like there is definitely still taboos around it within the Black community. But when it does come to healing certain wounds, sometimes it can feel like it can feel unsafe to a certain extent, especially when you don't know where to start or if you've got no one kind of around you that you feel safe enough to open up to. So I think it's important that that is kind of reiterated within the Black community, that it's okay to seek that help, you know. And when it comes to, you know, feeling unsafe and being fearful, something that comes to mind for me is the term shadow work, or our shadow side and the shadow parts of ourselves. It can sound scary to a lot of people who don't know what that means. So I'm going to ask, how would you describe the shadow side or shadow work? Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give to those who feel fearful or ashamed of that side of themselves?
Mm-hmm. You know, shadow work in and of itself really originated from the area of psychology, mostly, I think, in part, neuropsychologists and psychiatrists of many, many moons ago were trying to toy around with the idea of the shadow. And when we finally landed at it, where we started off with an idea of what the shadow is, where it was basically this notion that we have parts of ourselves that we have identified or deemed to be unworthy, unlikable, and that we, in unconscious and conscious ways, deny those parts of us. Like we basically say, this part of me does not exist, consciously or unconsciously, or this part of me I do not like, and I am, you know, relegating to the shadows, right? So that nobody can see them.
Right.
The thing about those parts is that they're still parts of you. And more often than not, there are parts of you that require some form of expression. And the part of the reason why they get relegated to or cast aside and relegated to the deep, dark parts of us is because we've received messages that they are unlikable, that they're unacceptable, and that people are unwilling to accept them as parts of us. And that sometimes happens by way of, in general, kind of like parenting and the messages that you get from your parents initially, that you get from more immediate family members, siblings, and whatnot. And then an extension of that, society, right? When society tells you this part of you is undesirable, you get that message on an ongoing basis, then there's a likely chance that your mind is going to, you know, start rejecting those pieces of you. And so we have what we call a lack of integration, meaning that you're not integrating into your whole self because you're still rejecting and denying parts of you that are still indeed a part of you. What we want to do when it comes to the shadow is integration and bringing in all of the pieces of who the person is in order to ensure that every piece, every part has an opportunity to experience fullness of expression and to be able to process and identify how it is or why it is that a person has created this shadow part of themselves, and trying to identify the ways in which they learn to do that, right? So all of that is a part of what we call an experiential process, meaning that it needs to happen and I'm talking purely kind of from the therapeutic perspective, but it needs to happen in relationship to a therapist. When situations come up where the shadow is very prominent, that is an opportunity for both clinician and client to start working on that part of the shadow and to start formalizing a way to integrate that piece back into the wholeness of who that person is.
Absolutely. I think that's powerful, because I feel like, you know, even from my own experience, unconsciously, I know that there are times when I've shut certain parts of myself away without even realizing until a later time. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned childhood, because I know for a fact that so much of the stuff that we have is stemmed from what we've been told when we are a child. Isn't it up to like a certain age that your formative years are the most important, basically, because those are kind of what stays with you in adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested in what ways can we disrupt that trauma chain and ensure that the narrative stays changed for future generations, our children and the children afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it starts off with really understanding one's own narrative, right? Like, if you want to break the chain, you have to understand in which ways you are a part of that chain, in which ways the chain has been perpetuated in your life, and in which ways it has been perpetuated even beyond you. Like, you know, when did it start? As far back as you can go. And having that point of identification offers an opportunity for further enlightenment and insight into who you are and who you have been. You're operating in this trauma space, right? And gives you an opportunity to then identify ways of moving forward. So I think a lot of the kind of like insight work, right, is some of the work that we kind of often forget and we can't leave behind, right? You have to know thyself, right, in order to actually create a newer self, a higher self, a wiser self. You have to know who you are profoundly, right? And so that's the hardest piece. It's the piece that people shy away from the most. Whenever I'm, you know, kind of newly acquainted with a new client that wants to just kind of speed up the process and how do I get this done, right? You know, sometimes I have to offer the reminder that in order to get this work done and disrupt the chains, what we have to do is we have to work backwards. We have to do ancestral work. We have to start diving into who were the people that were here before you that embodied pain and perhaps perpetuated pain for you, and in which way did that get captured in your mind, body, and spirit, and how can we then start the process of excavating that so that moving forward you can relate to the next generation in a way that's different and that offers an opportunity for respite from that trauma chain.
I love how you've highlighted the fact that it's important to go back, because a lot of us don't realize that, you know, it does, we know it kind of starts with us, and so we kind of tend to ignore the stuff that's come before us and maybe not even realize how impactful the generations before us are on our current lives. So absolutely, I can resonate with that. And so Marielle, you obviously provide very impactful healing work and help to heal others and to ensure the wellness of others. But what does living black and well look like for you?
Good question. It means really prioritizing two things, self-care and community care. So self-care, you know, in that we can realize our worth, we can realize that and place value upon our humanity as Black individuals, and deposit onto our very own cups on a daily basis, right? And not forget to do that because we matter, right? It's a way in which we self-proclaim that we matter, right? On a daily basis by taking minutes, if we can, of our time on a daily basis to just do the things that bring us joy and bring us peace. And especially to offset the enormity of stress that is placed upon us unwillingly. So for me, it's in part that, and it's the second part of that is an extension forward, right? Offering care to individuals within our community that can also help bolster us as a whole, right? As a whole Black community. And that can mean, you know, extending a reminder to a friend, to a family member, to anybody that is within one's extended circle, to let them know, listen, it's time to take care, or here's something to help you take care of yourself. Here's something, a small gesture, something loving that I want to send your way, a message, you know, anything that can be helpful and healing in order to help that person embody daily healing as well.
Yes, I love the self-care, but the community aspect of that, because it's about so much more than ourselves, isn't it? Wonderful. Well, Dr. Marielle BK, thank you again for providing your insight and for your time today. We're ever so grateful. What can we expect from you in the coming months, weeks, and where can we find you?
Couple of things, my goodness. So definitely a lot more of the things that I deposit into the community, including, you know, more knowledge, more videos around mental wellness and intergenerational trauma courses. And I'm working on what looks to be like a retreat. So people might want to look out for that as well. People can find me on mostly on my IG at dr.mariellebouquet. I'm also on TikTok with the same handle, and I have a YouTube channel. If you just look up my name, you can find it there. And I have a community of healers called the Soul Healing Collective, where we gather together around specific content around many of these areas that I tend to focus on. So people can find me in any of those places.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you again. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to sharing this with you.
Thank you for listening to Black and Well Voices. I'm your host, Olivia Grant, and you can find me at thehouseofog.com and on Instagram at OG Songstress.